This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly look at computers. Today, we welcome back to the program Greg Klein. He's on the science and technology beat at the News Gazette. He writes a couple of columns for the paper as well about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. Computers and You is a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions about computers with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. What would you like to talk with, to talk, start to talk about this afternoon? Maybe a gadget or two.
Well, I suppose that in the next month here, the big gadget that will be on all the front pages and a lot of people's the tip of a lot of people's tongues is the Apple's iPhone that it's going to be coming out with. It'll get a lot of attention, and it looks interesting. I think as a phone and portable internet device, I don't know that it's super groundbreaking. There are other things that have now, that, you know, that are available now that have similar capabilities. I think what is interesting about it is the way you interface with it. You know, if you a lot of people with their mobile phones now and their mobile computing devices like a Trio or a BlackBerry, you know, if you think about the way we interface with those, we either use a touch screen and a stylus, right? A thing like a pen that's not really a pen that we tap the screen with, buttons on the screen and keys and that kind of thing on a virtual keyboard. Or we have a really little thumb keyboard, mm-hmm. right? Where if you've got big fat thumbs like me, it can be kind of a challenge to type on those teeny tiny keys. And that's pretty much the way we interface with those devices now. Well, Apple's got a fairly good sized screen that, in fact, is a touch screen that you manipulate with your finger, and you can do things like call up a web page and it'll come up in its all its glory, but it's really small, yeah, right? Small. And you can't read it very well. But if you take your fingers and scroll them across that web page, it'll pop up and get bigger so that you can see the type. And I think this the interface is what's going to be interesting, because I think that's something that might, in fact, drive other people to other companies to adopt that something more natural than the stylus touchscreen or little tiny chiclet keyboard interfaces that we have now. And it may make these mobile devices even more useful and more ubiquitous as time goes on. Of course, the ultimate thing, I think with these, this is my outlook anyway, the ultimate interface for these devices is a voice interface. You know, where you just talk to it and tell it what to do or dictate your email to it or whatever. But we're a ways away from doing that very well technologically. So I think for a while, this kind of touch interface with your fingers, well, you know, what's more natural mm-hmm. than manipulating things with your fingers for most people, is going to be kind of a new paradigm for these kind of devices. Other than that, it's an interesting device. It's, you know, it can be your iPod and your phone and your mobile web browser and your mobile email and your mobile text messaging device. But as I say, there are other you know, Trios and BlackBerries and other devices that
do
have those
capabilities. Do they also do the same thing?
Yeah, they have pretty much all of the capabilities that we know at this point the iPhone will have. We don't really know everything that's going, I think, to be in there at this point. And I imagine, you know, Apple displayed it at its kind of beginning of the year big conference that it has. And Steve Jobs got out there and did a real job, you know, selling it and got everybody excited. But left a lot unsaid, I suspect, and there will be probably some surprises in it as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Hmm. We've got a listener waiting to talk with you, Greg, so let's go and take that call. A listener on line one. Hi.
Hi. This is a little more prosaic, but I'm trying to revive an old HP Pavilion for a friend just to do some email and light browsing on mm-hmm. a slow line, basically. No, nothing, just sort of utilitarian. And I ran this HP system, not restore, but recovery, and got the the disk drives, I mean the CD and the DVD running again. It recognizes it now, but it won't load the PCI controller, which I regard as a fairly low level part of the system, and I think you're just going to tell me to reinstall Windows. But I took out a little bit of hardware that was on the PCI, thinking that maybe there was a flaw in the hardware that was stopping the driver from loading, but that wasn't it. So do you have any suggestions other than just finding an old XP disk and reloading the whole Windows? Or?
Well, let me ask you this. When you said you ran the system restore disk, right, the ones that came with the...
Well, no, this was on the... I actually don't have all the stuff that came with it, which is probably what I need.
Okay.
But built in the HP, to their credit, they have this thing called system recovery.
Right.
It lets you
right.
restore the system, but it also gives you the option of reinstalling off of, I guess, a file that it has in a partition or something.
Right, right. And so you used that kind of repair file, recovery file.
Right.
Right.
Well, but it didn't restore the PCI capability, and I keep getting into Device Manager, and it says the driver isn't loaded. I look around, and there's a lot about loading drivers, but very little about PCI drivers because, as I say, I think it's such a low-level part of the operating system that it rarely... I think it might be an unusual problem. Tell me I'm wrong.
what was the state of this machine before you went to before you started trying to get it ready for your friend?
Was it
workable or?
It did some things, but like I said, the DVD player and the CD writer weren't recognized until I ran the recovery. And now, you know, they were kind of excited. It looked like I was getting some progress, but I can't get the simple thing like the PCI system, simple communication controller, I guess is what it's called.
Right. And what kind of a message do you get? Do you get any kind of an error message or anything
it
like
says
that?
The driver is not for this device is not loaded, and then it asks me to find a disk that it can get it from. I got a installation disk, but. It wouldn't just find that, and I didn't have the authorization code. So I guess I need the disk that came with it. Maybe they have but it just seems to me rather odd that
Yeah, well, it seems to be kind of odd, too, that they would, you know, that they'd go to the extent of putting this restore image on your drive, but it evidently doesn't restore everything.
Right. That's why I suspected a hardware problem, maybe that somehow was stopping it from booting up right and stopping from loading the driver. So I took out, you know, a couple of, like a FireWire, oddly finding it in there, a FireWire PCI card and an extra Ethernet card, which it doesn't really need. The video card works. I guess it has its own driver, but it operates over the PCI circuitry too, but apparently not using the simple communication controller.
Well, yeah, so the video card is a PCI video card.
Yeah.
Well, it must have, and it's got its own driver that's probably handling what
right.
needs to be handled. So in what instances are you not able to get the PCI hardware to work?
Well, those aforementioned cards, like the FireWire. And
so you can't stick a FireWire card in
I
there?
I tried
you
sticking
can't...
a FireWire disk on it, a disk drive on it, and it wouldn't recognize it.
And you tried an Ethernet card, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We installed a modem, primitive phone modem, analog modem, but it was a PCI, and we kept thinking, well, this was a bad modem, et cetera. But then I started looking a little closer, and nothing on the PCI except the video was working.
Interesting, and you're sure the video card is a PCI video card, not an AGAP?
Yeah, you have to screw it into the stack of PCI cards.
Okay.
So, but I just presume that that has its specialized drivers.
Have you? That'd be my assumption as well. Have you tried running, the Windows System Information Utility there and seeing what the hardware is and seeing if you could find a driver at a manufacturer's site on the web?
I have done that. I'm on the Mac side myself because I don't like to deal with all this stuff.
Yeah.
But I did run some of that and look around, and it recognizes the PCI slots. But it just says the driver isn't loaded, and I think I just need to find the previous maybe repair, or else just wipe it and reinstall XP. But that's kind of a nasty thing to be messing with.
Right. I'll say these three things. Okay.
Okay.
One, the easy stopgap measure I might try first is. Find out what that PCI hardware is, and you seem to indicate that you've done some of this, but find out whose PCI hardware that is, see if you can find a driver on the web and try to install that driver, right? That'd be the first thing I'd probably try, because that's easy, right?
Right.
It's just you find the driver, download it, and try and install it and see if it works.
Right.
Then if that didn't work, what you said... the second thing is, if somehow you could get a set of full recovery, I assume that at some point when this HP computer was purchased, it had a set of HP recovery CDs, right?
Right, I'm sure.
Take it back to its factory install state.
Right, they're somewhere.
If you could find those or get your hands on those, then that'd be the second thing I might try. And then the third thing is to try, as you've said, get a copy of XP and try and install that again. The thing that concerns me there is, would we be certain that XP would have the drivers that would be needed for all the hardware that's in this particular machine? Well, it's probably a fairly good bet that it would, because XP had just a voluminous amount of drivers. That was the whole idea, so that people didn't run into problems like this. So, it wouldn't be a terrible bet that XP might, in fact, be able to get this thing up and going again.
Yeah, well,
that's the most laborious.
the thing that I suspect is that why I suspected hardware is because, as you say, Windows has lots of drivers, and the PCI is such a basic low-level part of the system.
Yeah.
It would have to have some kind of driver that would be relatively universal.
At least a generic. Yeah.
Right, so it would be enough to operate it. So it seems to me that there might be something else that's stopping the driver from loading.
And that's the one other thing I wanted to say is, I don't think it's likely, because modern hardware is pretty, other than spinning hard drives, modern hardware is pretty robust. But it may be that you have a hardware problem.
Yeah.
That's possible. Although why the video card would work, if the PCI hardware is bad and the video card is a PCI video card, why that would work and the others wouldn't if you had a hardware problem, I don't know, unless, for some strange reason, only the video card slot survives and all the others got fried somehow.
It'd just be kind of bizarre. The price of a basic system, which this is probably comparable to these days. But I don't want to mess with Vista, and I don't think this person does either. And I guess they dual boot, right? XP and Vista, so you can ignore Vista if you don't want to.
So you're talking about if you got a new machine,
right.
They wouldn't want to be. Yeah, but you can now from some companies, including I believe Dell, you can now order a machine with Windows XP on it, because there are a substantial number of people who don't want to mess with Vista at this point, right?
Yeah.
So that's an option. But I'd try, if this is a functional machine and they just want to do basic email and. I guess a little web browsing and that kind of thing. I'd try to find a driver and see if you could fix it that way, and then maybe think about if you got an XP set of XP disks handy, then maybe try
right.
that.
Right. Okay. Well. So. Yeah. Just reaffirming my strategies basically, and making me think out loud here to decide to what's involved in doing it. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks for the call. Other questions are invited about computers this afternoon. This is our monthly program on computers here on the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. If you've got a question, if you need some help with some troubleshooting, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else toll-free, 800-222-9455-333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. No one waiting at the moment. Thinking of HP, HP now looks like it's going to have some tough competition from Kodak when it comes to printers. Kodak is in the printer business now. I guess they were in it briefly and then got out of it, and now they're back, and they've got three printers that they're marketing, and last week, I believe it was, they got a very mm-hmm. nice write-up in the New York Times.
Well, and you know, when you think about it, if somebody's going to do a printer for printing photos, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that Kodak would be logically somebody to
yep.
do it, right? They know how to do photo stuff. You know, they don't have any business in film anymore, so they got to have some kind of business. We were talking before we started here. One of the things they're touting with these printers is the longevity of the photos that you print, and that's something I think a lot of people who just kind of casually print their own photos don't think about. You know, unless you're using a ink for it and paper for it to give you some life, you know, mm-hmm. those some printed photos tend to fade more quickly than good old fashioned photos that we have from 100 years ago or
yeah.
50 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's if you're going to print photos and you're serious about, you know, it's a, you're a serious hobbyist, or you just someone who does it every once in a while, but you want to keep those photos around, that's a good thing to keep in mind when you're looking, A, for a printer, and then B, going through your printing process.
Yeah. It's interesting also to realize that the price of printers apparently has really come way, way down, because these printers, the article said, you know, you're going to pay a little bit more for one of these printers, but you'll pay less for ink. That's one of the highlights of it. And as you mentioned, the photos last longer, but the base model sells for $150.
Right. And that's actually for a base model printer. If you've priced printers lately, and I try to price all these things periodically, that's actually a little expensive. You know, because you can get you can get very nice printers for $70, $80, $90, $100 anymore. The problem is that for the model that printer manufacturers have been using for a number of years is the old model for razors and razor blades, right? Back when you used to replace razor blades and razors. For people who, like me, who are old enough to remember something like that, you know, the razor companies gave away the razors
uh-huh.
so that they could sell you the blades, right?
Right.
At an inflated price, or at a good price for them. And that is what printer companies have been doing for years. They pretty much, they don't give it to you, but they give you the printer for a really good price, and then they charge you a lot of money for those tanks of ink, as you know, particularly if you use an inkjet printer. So, you know, you get an $80 printer, and then the ink runs out, and you go to buy the ink, and it's a $40 canister of ink, right?
Yeah.
Cartridge of ink.
Mm-hmm.
So half the price of the printer, right? And now, you know, customers have begun to not be very happy with that, right? And they've begun to try alternatives. There are companies that have made a market for themselves in refilling those ink cartridges, recycling and refilling them, and then selling those refilled cartridges at a lower rate. Now, I think those cartridges, there are good ones and there are bad ones. You know, anytime you tamper with something like that, so to speak, you may get a bad cartridge that leaks, for example, and that's not good for your printer. But a lot of people have been using these recycled refilled cartridges. So now printer companies just recently have begun doing this, okay? Just what Kodak is doing. The printer costs a little more, but the ink cartridges cost less. Now, here's the thing you have to be careful of if you're a consumer. In some cases, yes, the ink cartridges cost less. They also contain less ink than you get in that. So you might get a 20, and I'm making up these numbers, but the point stands. You might get a $20 ink cartridge instead of a $40, for a color ink cartridge. So you might get a $20 color ink cartridge instead of a $40 color ink cartridge. But if you look at the fine print on the box, compare the packages, that $40 ink cartridge may contain 10 ounces, and that $20 ink cartridge might contain 7.5 ounces. So you kind of have to be it's one more thing kind of to pay attention to when you're thinking through this.
So take your calculator along.
You might need a calculator to figure. But essentially, you can still get a good deal on a printer. You may be able to get a better deal on ink, but you need to be aware of these variables, and it's just something more to think about when you're thinking about buying a printer.
Yeah. Well, David Pogue at the New York Times said, getting to the bottom of all these this very question, he said, to quote him, is like trying to calculate the interest on the penalties for late payment of the alternative minimum tax on non-farm income. It's really complicated. Yeah. So,
and I'll say this, as I often say to people when I'm talking to them about printers. If you want to print photos, you're probably going to buy an inkjet printer, and you're going to get into this morass of things that you have to think about and calculate, unless you're willing to pay whatever. If you're not really that interested in printing photos, and you mostly print documents, and those are mostly text-based documents, and even they can have some graphics and photos, but you're not worried about printing them as photo prints, so to speak, but as word processing documents or whatever with art in it, you're probably better off with a laser printer, because a laser printers now you can get used to be laser printers. The first laser printer I bought, these many years ago, I won't even say how long ago it was. It cost $1,100.
Wow.
That's a lot more than a really nice computer that you can buy now, at that time. But now, laser printers have gotten down so that you can get a nice laser printer for a couple $100. And those laser printer cartridges, which are not, liquid ink, so to speak, last a long, long time, right? Thousands and thousands of pages in some cases. So if you work out your cost per page, you get a lot lower cost per page than you get with inkjet printers. Now, a good color laser printer that maybe you'd want to print photos on, not so inexpensive. But you can get a nice black and white laser printer for a very good price now. And if that's mostly what you do, that's the kind of thing you ought to think about as opposed to an inkjet.
We've got a call that's come in just a moment ago, and we're going to get to this listener right away. But I have one more question when it comes to printers and photos, and that is, going back to the idea of the razor blade, I came up in the dark room, and one of the joys of working with film was, in printing were the different kinds of papers that were available. Are there different types of papers available for these printers?
Absolutely. And if you go, to any office supply store even, or a store, computer store that sells a lot of printers, electronics store, and also sells the supplies for those things, you'll see various choices. And you want to look at that paper, and if you're planning on printing photos that you want to keep around, You want to get a paper that's made for printing photos that you want to keep around, right?
Right.
You don't want to get copy paper or even plain inkjet printer paper. You want to get photo paper, it's a general rule of thumb. I don't think it's absolutely necessary, but it's a general rule of thumb that it's good to buy the paper for your printer from the company that made your printer. Almost all of them make this is our HP paper, or this is our Epson paper, or this is our
Kodak paper.
Yeah, right.
That's another place that Kodak might have a hit on its hand, is they
right.
should know papers as well.
Right. I've seen generally really positive reviews of these printers that they've come out with. And, you know, they're obviously aimed at printing photos. And again, you'd think if somebody was going to be pretty good at doing that, it'd be Kodak. Then again, HP's got a lot of experience, for example, and so does Epson. Most of the printer companies have been in
They've
it
been
for
in
a while,
for a long
too.
Time, too. So. Yeah. Let's take this call now. Listener on line one, hi.
Good afternoon. I've got a strange question. I own an NEC Versa 6230, which is probably 8 years old. I don't know when I bought it. It's a laptop, and it runs Windows 95. And, of course, it's got diskettes, but it did have a station for it, you use it like a regular computer. And so I could put in a CD, but, of course, it doesn't write to CDs or anything like that. Now I want to replace this thing.
Uh-huh.
And should I just pitch it, or do you think that there's anybody that could use it, like, sometimes they're asking if you have an old computer. I just, before I pitch it, I'd rather have somebody have it if they can use it.
Well, you might offer it around, ma'am. It sounds to me like it's probably old enough that even the people that like to get used computers and refurbish them, that they might have a hard time with it, because it sounds even like if it's Windows 95, we're thinking about it's about a decade old, right?
Yeah. Well, we have a Dell regular computer, and the only thing is on that one we have Windows ME. I know you love that. And it hasn't really given us all that much trouble.
Well, that's good.
However, for reasons of my husband's visual acuity, he needs to have DOS program for WordPerfect to work.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we have to keep this. Now, the new computers, I'm trying to think of what I should try to buy, because we have loads and loads of diskettes, and the new computers don't even come with diskette drives anymore.
Right.
So what does one do?
What do you have on when you say you have loads and loads of diskettes?
Well, I have, and also that's another thing, is programs.
Mm-hmm.
If I buy a new computer, does that mean I will have to invest in all new programs that are working fine on the Dell?
Probably.
Problem.
Yeah, depending on what it is, but if you're going from Windows XP, you're going to buy a new computer. It's going to have Windows Vista in it.
Yeah, well, we don't even have XP. We have ME.
ME. Oh, that's right. Yeah. You're going to go from ME to Vista.
Yeah.
It's likely that most of the programs you use, yes, will need to be. Now, here's the thing about that. You might not have to buy all of those new.
Uh-huh.
They may have, updates that you can download and install that'll make your software compatible with Vista.
Yeah.
But it's likely that you'll have to buy some, too.
Right. Well, I was thinking of one. I don't do anything but bookkeeping, email, word processing, and that's basically, and taxes. And so I don't need I do have pictures, but it's not that I need a 10,000 megabyte or gigabyte drive, and that I know I want to have the most memory if I can. But it's not, we are not really junkies. So I'm just thinking of what I should even ask for. I do want to get, the Windows version that's going to last me everything seems to be going out. As soon as I'm comfortable with it, they say, oh, we don't support this. It was like TurboTax this year did not support my version anymore. So, you know, so what do you suggest? That I or is an Apple even better if I have to buy everything new anyway?
Well, it's something you might think about. But, you know, when people ask me about that and you know, full disclosure, I like Apple products. Okay, yeah. I use an Apple at home mostly because it's a lot easier to administrate. And when I'm at home, you know, just doing fun things,
yeah,
as opposed to professional things.
Yeah, well, I've been using.
I don't want to mess with anything.
Yeah.
But
Mossberg always, you know, goes for Apple's over Microsoft, but. You know, that's fair, but I've been used to Microsoft for years. So
right. Yeah. What I tell people is, look, if you're going to be changing computers, in your case, you're going from Windows ME to Windows Vista.
Mm-hmm.
They have some operational differences, although I think you'd be fairly familiar with Vista as you got into it.
Right.
But the fact is they are different in many ways. They work differently. Okay, so you're going to have to relearn a lot of stuff anyway. So that is the point at which maybe you then think, well, maybe I would like to try an Apple this time. I'm buying Vista. I'm going to have to relearn the way I do things. I'm going to have to get new software. It may be logical for you to think about that.
Okay.
Now, in the case of a lot of people, it isn't logical because if they've got years of Windows experience, then Windows XP is a fine operating system that I also use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're comfortable with it. It doesn't often make a lot of sense to switch and give up all that knowledge that you built up. But in your case, as I say, you're going from ME to Vista, you're going to have to relearn some things anyway. You're going to have to get some new software. So maybe it's something you think about.
So if you get if I would get a computer, a laptop with the Vista, the Premiere or whatever, Home Premiere or whatever that thing is, which does that include the suite for like where's Word and those kind of things in
well,
there?
Well, I think it will depend on who you buy it from.
I see.
Some will include something like that, probably Microsoft Works, and some won't.
Aha, okay.
You said you guys use Word Perfect now, and if you want to...
I can use all of them. It doesn't really make any difference. I like WordPerfect because I get my view. I can figure out what I did wrong, possibly what is, you know, goofing up a project. So that's the only reason I like WordPerfect. And I don't know if Word has ever come around to doing disclosure of what goes behind the...
Well, you'll want to make sure if that's what you want to use, and this goes in general, okay? So
yeah.
You have certain pieces of software you like to use.
Uh-huh.
Before I upgraded to Vista, I'd check out and make sure that software has now been upgraded for Vista as well, right?
Uh-huh.
So that you know you'll be able to use the software that you're familiar with and not have to go and start from square one or two or three or whatever.
Well, you know, basically they're all the same. Word is very simple, too. The only thing is, like, I can't ever... pin down what could have gone wrong with, well, all of a sudden something disappears or something, you know, and I go in my view thing there for WordPerfect, and there I have it, you know. So I said, okay, I'll just take that out and start all over again. But
and if you're, let me say this too, if your Dell is working for you right now, your Dell that runs Windows ME, you know, you're not driven by some need to have to buy a new computer right now.
Uh-huh.
I would wait.
Oh.
I would wait at least 6 months.
Okay.
And I might wait a year if you're comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
Because Vista is a new operating system. Other software has not entirely caught up with it yet and won't for a few months at least.
Uh-huh.
And Vista itself hasn't entirely caught up with itself at this point and won't for a few months, if not more.
Yeah.
So the longer you wait, the more polished and stable it gets, and the more likely the software you want to use has been upgraded to work with it.
Okay. Well, that's a very good idea. Then I'll just save a lot of money and wait.
Okay. Save a lot of frustration, too, probably.
Yeah, well,
maybe,
yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call this afternoon. Let's take another call. Listener on line two. Hi.
Hi. I have two questions. One, I got into real trouble last week. I got an error message, security, a low-level security alert from Norton, and it just gave a long string of letters and numbers and said that that entity was trying to access all of my ports. Gave me three choices, block, always block, never block, or create a firewall. The directions for creating the firewall were real complicated. I was getting ready to go out of town, and so I did what I thought was the safest thing, and I clicked on always block. What happened was I was not able to access Yahoo, which is my homepage, and my email. Finally, I had to go to another computer that fortunately had broadband and use my flash drive and contact Norton, and they said, what you need to do is just completely remove the Norton that you have, and we'll give you a free upgrade and extend your subscription. And that worked fine. Now I'm good to go. But I had no idea that it was Yahoo that was trying to access those ports. I had no idea why they were trying to. How would I get more information before I made a dumb decision?
Well, here's what I suggest is probably the first thing you do, okay? You said the error message gave you a bunch of code, right? Told you it was error number 33.
It wasn't an error message. It was actually a low-level security alert.
But it gave you a code for that,
right?
What that security alert was about, right?
Uh-huh.
So the first thing you probably wanted to do was cut and paste or jot that code down, put it into Google with quote marks around it, all right? Which tells Google to look for exactly that string of characters and see what you could find out about it. And I imagine you would have found out that that was Yahoo trying to do business that you wanted it to do, right?
Or an update, do you think it was?
That's possible. I wouldn't know without looking at that, at that myself. But let me just talk about that problem in a general sense, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Ports... There are physical ports and there are virtual ports, right?
Right.
Physical ports are things that you plug in, like your keyboard,
USB.
Your printer, USB, and that kind of thing. And virtual ports are ways on a network of that things move back and forth and get done, right?
Okay.
They're little doors or little windows, however you want to look at it, that let things in and out, right?
Right.
Well, some things you don't want to let in and out,
exactly.
Right? And some things you do want to let in and out. There are a lot of things you do want to let in and out because to have your web browser function or your email program, all of those need to get in and out of ports, right? So, and that's essentially, this is, you have like Norton Security Suite, I take it.
Uh-huh.
All right. So what it was telling you in essence is this entity, this program, wants to get in and out of these ports, right?
All of my ports.
Or it wanted all your ports. Again, I'd have to look at this to tell you the exact, look this up to tell you the exact thing. But so it's telling you that Yahoo evidently wanted to use these ports.
Right.
Then it gave you the series of choices that you can make, and you probably should have told it, let it do it in this case, right?
Right, but that was kind of scary because I didn't know who it was.
Right, exactly.
Plus, added on that Norton wasn't giving me alert.
What, now, what was that?
Well, it was not only that, but Norton saw it as some kind of low-level danger. Because they were giving me an alert.
Again, what Norton is telling you is that this kind of thing can be bad.
Okay.
All right? Now, in this instance, wasn't necessarily bad. Again, without putting in the code myself and looking at exactly what it was, I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head. But, in this, it wasn't telling you necessarily that this was bad. It was telling you that this kind of situation can be problematic, okay? So, and giving you the chance to judge whether it was or not, and to allow that or not.
Okay.
So the best thing, as I say, would have been to type that into, probably put that into Google and see what you found out about
that
it.
That makes sense.
Now, the other thing is, you know, it's probably not bad that you got an updated version of Norton and a new subscription to your virus definitions and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think it was necessarily, you know, and this is Norton. Every time you try to call them with a problem, they want to sell you the latest version, right?
I didn't get that.
You didn't?
No. I figured I was talking to somebody in India. I did live chat.
Oh, okay.
And
but they did sell you the new version, right?
No, they didn't sell it to me. They gave it to me.
Really? Well, that's good. I'm not going to say bad things about Norton then.
Okay.
However, let me say this. I think your tech support person took the and probably correctly so. They did the easy thing, right?
Yeah, right.
They give you a new version. You install that. Everything gets started clean.
Right.
It's problem solved.
Right.
But the fact is, you could have gone back into your settings for Norton, your security settings in Norton, and you could have wiped out
the latest
blocking. Yeah.
How?
Yeah. Well, you'd have to go into I don't have Norton in front of me, right?
I click on the Norton icon. I don't know what package you have,
but in Norton there's a place in there where it says preferences or options or security set levels or some language of that sort, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you go in and you look at those settings, I'm sure there's an area in there that shows you what things you have blocked off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can unblock those.
Okay.
So,
all right.
But you need to get a little more familiar with the software to do that.
Right.
But,
right.
It wasn't a permanent change is what I'm saying. It's just a setting in that security software.
Right.
And what you set, you can unset.
Okay.
You know, but you're not, if they gave it to you particularly, you know, you're not hurting to have the new version and a renewal of your subscription and that kind of thing. That, in fact, that was good of them to do that, and I laud their having done so for you.
Okay.
Kind of a weird problem.
All right, and I wanted to say one other thing before we wrap up your problem here. So I assume you have the Norton Security Suite, right? And that it's got various components and antivirus software, Norton antivirus, and that it's also got a firewall,
right?
And evidently that firewall was not turned on.
Oh.
And it sounded to me, at least from the way you described the message, the firewall's not turned on, and Norton was asking you whether one of the things you wanted to do was turn that firewall on. Now, that might be good, all right?
Okay.
On the other hand, it might also be bad, because Windows, you're using Windows XP, I take it.
Yeah.
Has its own built-in firewall, which may or may not be active.
Okay.
And you don't want two firewalls running at the same time because, like antivirus programs, although they tend less to do this than antivirus programs, they still can conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, you either want the Windows firewall running or you want your security suite firewall running.
Okay.
Usually, it's a good idea to have your security suite firewall running. Mm-hmm. Because the Windows firewall is a pretty basic piece of software that's included in Windows, and your security suite software is usually more capable than the Windows firewall.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when I hook up with my dial-up provider, not every time, but occasionally, down in the taskbar, It'll be like it's trying to connect with the Windows version of the internet. I can't say it right now. Anyway, maybe I'll get 7-8 times that it's trying to connect with it. But I will be hooked up to my dial-up because I can see that from the icon, or if I picked up a phone, I could tell that I was on. But it will say you're not connected with the Internet, and so Internet Explorer. You're not connected to Internet Explorer, and would you like to work offline or try again? But I really am hooked up. And thereafter, maybe I can get into my email, but thereafter, if I try to do anything else, it totally crashes. And the only thing I can do is turn off the power, wait a minute, and reboot. And I have no idea why that's happening or where to look to correct it.
I didn't get really the entire gist of your problem.
Okay.
You try to connect to your dial-up provider. Right?
Yeah, and they're trying to display my homepage for Internet Explorer. Down in the taskbar.
You say there, who? Your provider.
I guess, because I'm definitely connected to the Internet, I can tell.
Tell me the procedure you follow to connect to your dial-up provider.
Okay, I click on the icon in the taskbar.
What icon?
It's Earthlink.
Uh-huh.
I click on that, says sign in, then I
When you do that, what do you get? When you click on Earthlink icon, what do you get?
On the Earthlink icon, it depends on where I do it. If it's on my desktop, then I just get, the little screen that shows connect, and it shows that it's dialing up and connecting.
So it's a Windows dialog box.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. Then what I need to do is connect to Internet Explorer. And somehow or other, the link between Earthlink and Internet Explorer don't recognize each other, because I'm actually connected, but lots of times I'll get a message that says I'm not connected.
And you know what? I got to jump in here.
Oh, we have time.
If the listener wants to stay on the line, would you take the call, maybe talk with her a little bit off the air, Greg?
Yeah, that would be really nice.
Thank you.
Okay, because we're past time here, and this is going to take a little sorting out. So there we'll leave it. Our thanks very much this afternoon to Greg Klein of the News Gazette. He's the science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. He also writes a couple of columns for the newspaper about computing. In this program, Computers and You is a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month here on the Afternoon Magazine.